Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Marigold Clothing, making fashion fun since 1989, in Broad Ripple, featuring women's clothing, gifts, and accessories, and committed to customer service. More on Facebook or at marigoldclothing.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are talking beer, fests, and food. Perfect topics for summertime in Indiana. We'll hear about a new craft brewery when we talk with Mark and Tanya Swartz of Cannonball Brewing Company. And Cannonball chef Aaron Kim, formerly of Our Bistro, fills us in on what we can expect on the menu when the brewery opens in Indianapolis. And speaking of chefs, we'll hear about an upcoming event that teams up chefs with bartenders and artists when we talk with Tom England about Indulge, Imbibe, Inspire. And we'll head into the kitchen with local chef Eli Laidlaw for a Cook This segment at Platt 99 in Indianapolis. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. The craft beer scene in Indianapolis continues to grow, and we will have another new brewery soon when Cannonball Brewing Company opens at 17th and Bellefontaine Streets in Indianapolis. I stopped by the brewery recently to talk with brewer Mark Swartz and his wife Tanya to hear about how the whole project got started.
I was an airline pilot for ATA, and we traveled the world drinking different beers. And so I got to experience a lot of different kinds of beer that way, and it started brewing beer at home, and it kind of grew from that.
Well, when was that?
Probably 12 years ago I started.
So you've been at this a while.
I have.
So how did that go? I mean, were you just making small batches? Did you start with the kits like so many people start with? Or how did it develop?
With me, yeah, I did it about 2 kits and then went on and started doing my own.
How do you go, though, from brewing beer at home to thinking, I'm going to have a brewery? You know, it's a dream for a lot of people. I think you're probably living the dream for a lot of home brewers.
Right. That's why I'm starting. It's a 2-barrel system. It's a very small commercial system. So I wanted to start small because I have not done this before. So
how does the smaller systems work? You know, we're used to seeing the huge barrels of our bigger production breweries.
This one, it works off of basically the same system I have at home for my homebrew system, only on a larger scale. So I brew 10 gallons at home, but this will brew 62.
Okay, so you can do that amount at a time?
Yes.
So what kind of beers have you brewed, and was there a learning curve? Was there some that you got into brewing and that we can expect to see here?
I think with brewing, it's kind of like cooking, where it's a natural progression where you just kind of experiment and get better and then learn different nuances of it where it gets better each mm-hmm. time.
Any favorites?
I love Saisons and the Belgians, and I love those types of beer. I enjoy them all. I really do. I'm kind of more seasonal with it. I definitely don't drink many stouts in the summertime, but and they're more, for me, they're more of a winter, fall type of beer.
But then how do you get to the point of, you're brewing at home and you have a nice hobby going and probably people like it, but then how do you make that leap to thinking, I'm going to open something?
It's a tough question. It really is. I think it has a lot to do with ATA going out of business.
Right.
And realizing kind of the airline industry is not where I wanted to be anymore, and started looking around and looking at what I enjoyed doing, and I could see myself going to work and brewing beer every day.
Now, had you ever had any kind of background in this sort of business?
No, not at all. None.
Well, tell me what you think. You know, how do you see the progression of Cannonball?
Okay, so, well, like he was saying with, you know, aviation, after ATA went out of business, you know, he was really struggling to try to find a place for himself and, you know, where he fit and what he wanted to do. And it was very hard for him to get back into flying because, you know, back in 08 was when they went under, and so many other airlines did. And so it was just really, really tough to try to get back into. So, you know, we actually sat and watched a documentary one day I can't think of his name, from Dogfish Head did. And anyway, you know, Mark just looked at me and said, you know, you just never see a ticked off brewer, you know? And so I think that was kind of this moment he had, this epiphany where he was like, you know, maybe this is what I'm going to do. And so I think it just kind of, that started the ball rolling, really, or the thought process of it anyway.
Did it take long to come around to the idea of, hey, we're going to open a brewery?
I've been looking at buildings for years. I think that was the hardest part. About 2-3 years I've been looking for buildings.
Oh, yeah, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's been the hardest part, is finding the right space.
So what appealed about this space? So you're at 17th and Bellefontaine in Indianapolis, not a very high traffic neighborhood. So I don't, you know, people might not be familiar with the neighborhood. What appealed about this location?
I think that because we lived in Heron Morton, which is so close, and we were able to watch the growth there and how it changed so much. I think it was just kind of exciting to be a part of that again, but on the business side. I think this is going to spur, you know, a lot more growth here. I think that just having us here will make other people want to maybe, you know, have a business nearby, and having the Monon 2 blocks away, I think, is going to be a lot of bike traffic and foot traffic.
Sure.
So I think that'll help.
What do you think when you saw the building? Could you imagine it as a brewery when you first walked in?
I could. It was in horrible shape, but for some reason it spoke to me. I decided then that that's where I wanted to do this.
Really? Okay, now what did it say? How did it speak to you? What did you see in it?
I just saw the perfect size space and the old building, and at that time the garage door was not in, so I just saw the potential of this was the perfect size of what I wanted.
So now, tell me how it's going to all work. You know, you have some tanks behind the bar, you have more in the basement. How does that system work?
We'll be brewing upstairs behind the bar, and then the fermenters will be downstairs, and we'll just be serving the through the draft system right from the walk-in. Hopefully it'll be mainly pints and growlers to go is what we'll start with.
So what kind of beers can we expect?
It'll be all over the place.
Well, now that's fun. How so? Tell me a little bit more.
Since I've been brewing at home for 12 years, I have probably a couple hundred recipes at home. So I'm just looking forward to picking out the best ones and just come in and brew what you feel like doing and talk to Erin and see what she wants to make and kind of do some nice pairings.
We've been talking with Mark and Tanya Swartz of Cannonball Brewing Company in Indianapolis. We'll be back with Cannonball's chef, Erin Kemp. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Brewing Company opens this summer in Indianapolis, a well-known chef will be in the brewery's kitchen. Chef Erin Kemp, who we know from Indy's highly regarded R Bistro, has a lot of ideas for the new menu and is looking forward to the challenge of cooking at the brewery.
Well, I'm excited to work with Mark and Tanya. I've known them for a number of years now. Tanya actually worked with me at our bistro, and his ever-changing beer palette and offerings, I hope to kind of do the same with the food. I don't want the food to be an afterthought. Most tasting rooms just right. have food because they have to,
right.
but I want people to come for the beer and stay for the food.
I like that. So tell me what we can expect. Now, I have seen the downstairs area. It's small, but then you're used to working in kind of a small space. So what do you envision the menu might be like?
I think we'll have a few staple items that'll probably change seasonally because that's sort of my cup of tea from our bistro. I get bored if the menu lasts more than a week. So yeah. So I expect things. We'll have some staples, and then I love ethnic food, so I think we'll incorporate a lot of different ethnicities. I'm already thinking about empanadas and curries and things like that that really go well with beer. And mindful matching of beer and food.
Now, is that a challenge? We've heard a lot in the past years about beer dinners and, beer pairings, but they sometimes don't seem as natural as wine pairings, for example. So is that a challenge, working with the beers and the different flavor profiles?
It's a fun challenge. I think it's almost easier. I think beer is almost more food-friendly than wines, and so often I taste a beer and I immediately get a flavor in mind.
That's very cool. So how does that work? When you taste something, what are you thinking?
I think of the heartiness of the beer versus the food. So we have like matching. I don't want the beer to overpower the food, but we're talking about a Thai basil beer, and that just seems like an easy starting point for a delicious Asian dish or something to incorporate some of the flavors from the beer.
So a Thai basil beer,
right.
You have to tell me a little bit about that. That's not a flavor profile that I see very often when we're talking about beer.
It's a lighter, more of a summertime. It's kind of, I think of it as my lawnmower beer. It's a Thai basil ginger beer that I've been brewing for quite a few years now. And it's definitely just a golden ale with the flavor, with the Thai basil and ginger.
So now I need to ask, what other sort of interesting combinations have you been working with over the years?
Oh, gosh. You have to come in and see, because it's all over the place.
Are there some things you're looking forward to, Aaron, looking forward to working with?
Oh, definitely. I think still, working seasonally is just a natural thing to do for the beers and for just, the way I like to design a menu. I'm really excited about, doing some amazing stuff from scratch. We're talking about making our own tortillas and things like that with different interesting combinations that aren't necessarily, classically Mexican. We're looking at like a rye tortilla with corned beef, almost like a Reuben.
That sounds good.
Have a beer with it.
It does scream have a beer.
So just fun vehicles for different items that will match really great with the beers.
Now, tell me a little bit about what people can expect in the tasting room itself. You mentioned the garage door that you have that opens up to the sidewalk. Any other descriptions that you could give for people? Kind of give them an idea of what it's going to be like.
Wow. Well, yeah. I mean, so the feel we're looking for is just kind of cozy but industrial, and a lot of reclaimed aspects we're going to use in here. So we'll have a drink rail at the garage door, so there'll at least be probably about 5 bar stools, which will be really nice when it's nice out. We could have the door open. We'll have some tables in the back. Mostly we'll have bar seating, and then we're looking at putting some seating out on the patio as well that will be fenced in eventually.
And you have this beautiful communal table up front, so that's very pretty too.
Well, thanks. Yes, this was great find from Society of Salvage that came out of Central State. So so we had fun reworking it and making it look pretty. So
Mark, if you could tell me just a little bit about the system and the capacity, just so that I know from, you know, how much you'll be making and how much you can make and that sort of stuff.
Okay, well, it's a electric, all electric two-barrel system. We're starting off with 8 beers we'll have on tap. So, and we have 7 fermenters and 7 bright tanks, so we'll be serving right from the bright tanks. So
do you have an idea of what those first beers might be?
I'm working on that right now. Lately, I've been so busy with the build out. I actually have not been able to brew for about 4 months now. I know it's killing me. I'd rather be brewing beer than laying tile, but
I guess you got to get that tile.
I have to get there. Yes. So.
Okay, now you have to talk a little bit about beer brunch. That sounds like a great idea.
People seem to love beer brunches. I mean, brunch people love anyway, but when they're paired, the food is paired with beer, even more so. So it's a great way for people to get to try everything you offer, because you offer small pours, small courses. I think it's a great kind of great way to promote your beers, and I think we'd have a full house.
I think you would, too. So now I have to think of special dinners and things like that. You're thinking of, you know... It just seems like the it's a blank slate, you know, that you could do all sorts of things.
Right. I think, you know, thematic dinners, seasonal dinners are, yeah, they just sort of write themselves. The menus write themselves. So, yeah, I think people are really into that, too.
I think so. Now, Mark, would you brew beer to fit a particular menu, or would you, Aaron, create the menu to fit a particular beer?
I think we'll do both, actually. I looking forward to working together and collaborating on that, where we could do it either way. I mean, I'm sure we'll do it both ways.
Yeah.
So.
I think you know, being a small operation, you know, we can change whatever we want on our whim, and I think that's a great way to operate for something like beer, because it is like a relaxed environment, and I think people are, you know, easily pleased with some good beer. And then, you know, hopefully they'll be surprised at how good the food is.
We've been talking beer and food with Chef Aaron Kemp and Mark and Tanya Swartz of Cannonball Brewing Company in Indianapolis. To find out more about the brewery, look for it on Facebook. And stay with us here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio for info on the upcoming food event Indulge, Imbibe, Inspire when we're back here on WFYI and WFYI.org. As I've said before here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, June is an awesome month for food events. The Marion County Fair is going on, and I had the opportunity this week to judge some of the delicious food entries at the fair. But there are all sorts of great events that offer a taste of Indiana, and one of the most intriguing is Indulge, Imbibe, Inspire, or I3, as Dig In Executive Director Tom England calls it. I talked with Tom recently about the event, and he explained what it's all about and its connection to Dig In, A Taste of Indiana.
I3 stands for Indulge, Imbibe, Imagine, and it brings together a chef, a bartender, and an artist around one theme. And so the themes that the teams use are Indiana landmarks. And so this year, like what? Yeah, this year we're featuring the landmarks that are on the cultural trail. So we've got, you know, things from Madam Walker Theater, which is where the event's going to be held, you know, to the Koch Building on Mass Ave, Fountain Square, Scottish Rite Cathedral, Anthonyum. There's over 20 landmarks on the cultural trail, and so we'll be featuring 15 of them. A couple some people don't know of, Cenotaph Square. Everybody has that look of what?
Where is that?
That's in the Legion Mall. So right between the American Legion National Headquarters and the Central Library, there's a square there that has, looks like an Egyptian monolith. And it's that area. People go by it and they just don't understand what it is. And so, you know, that's an inspiration for one of these teams who are going to do the art, the cocktail and food around, which I love the whole idea of, you know, looking at a space and everybody interprets it a little different. And so as they get together as a team, they talk through it and they come up with this common idea around what that landmark is. So it's extremely interesting.
Now, how do you create the teams? You know, do you assign people to a team? Is it by random drawing or how does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's random drawing. So we have, 15 chefs lined up, 15 bartenders and 15 artists. And 4 weeks ago, 6 weeks before the event, we had them draw out of a hat, which their landmark they had. And so this is one of the things we wanted to encourage with this event was to grow the connections in the industry. So you couldn't just work with a bartender from your restaurant if you were a chef. You have to work with somebody else at someplace else to really start to build those relationships. And so that people start to have different food understanding or different drink understanding and you don't get in that, you know, house thought of what things should be. And then to bring the artist into it and, just really bring up a whole new audience. And the whole new audience thing is the thing we're focusing on. So as, you know, a local foods organization, we have a lot of restaurants that are local food restaurants now that did not exist 8 years ago when we started.
Now tell me, you know, when you talk about when you started, tell me the purpose of this event and how it relates to Dig In, A Taste of Indiana.
Sure. So the I3 event was built around this whole idea of, you know, people who like art also tend to like really good food. And so a lot of the people who like art also don't get as much local food as what you would think. So we're trying to bring all that together by bringing in the new local foods aspect to the people who are loving art. So as an organization, you know, we are a nonprofit promotion of Indiana food and agriculture.
And that organization is called Dig In, right?
Correct. Yeah. And people get confused. So people think Dig In is actually a festival that's the last Sunday in August. And Dig In is the organization who puts on Taste of Indiana, which is the festival at the last Sunday in August. So Dig In is a nonprofit promotion of Indiana food and agriculture. So we have to have I3 to support that festival, Taste of Indiana, because Taste of Indiana is actually a money loser for us. We don't make money on this. In that Taste of Indiana event, because we pay for every single thing that's served in that park. So we pay for all the food that comes from the farm. We pay for all the drinks, even the samples that are given out. We pay for that as an organization because we want to know that all those restaurants are still going to survive after doing 3,000 samples. And, you know, the restaurants and the breweries and everybody who, I mean, these are small businesses. They really can't afford to give out, you know, 2,000 free samples, 3,000 free samples of anything and still stay in business the next day.
These sorts of events can be very stressful on the small businesses, the restaurants, in terms of the product, in terms of staffing, yeah. And that sort of thing. So A Taste of Indiana is one of the very few events that actually pay for the product. So I can see why you need to raise money to be able to do that.
Yeah, and people don't realize restaurants make between 5% and 7% return on investment if they're really run well. So if I give something away, I have to sell 20 of those to break even on that one that I just gave away, with that 5% return on investment. So, yeah, we don't want these places to go bankrupt. We're literally trying to help them by promoting them during these festivals and I3 and Munch Madness and all the other events that we do.
So I3 and like the one, the Munch Madness that was earlier this year. So they're aimed to raise money to help put on A Taste of Indiana, but also to bring the community together. Now, how does the art community, how does that work with the food and beverage community? It's kind of an interesting juxtaposition.
It's awesome though. You know, last year we piloted the I3 event and we had 5 teams. And at the end, all the artists were so excited because they said, you know, everybody was talking to us and, you know, people wanted to know the story behind our art and, you know, how we were doing the art and everything. And the attendees who were on the art side were coming to us and saying, I never thought about food as an art or the drink as an art as they're putting it together. And so, you know, all around, people were really thinking about more how food and drink are art, but also how art is, you know, part of that whole body aspect of life. So, you know, it brings in a new crowd that we don't see normally.
Now, how does the event work? What can people expect? Do you see people making food, making drinks, making art? How does it work?
Yeah. So as you come in the Madame Walker Theater, you'll walk around from station to station, and each station will have the bartender, the chef, and the artist. Since the artist found out about 6 weeks ago what they were going to be doing, they go out, research the and think about what they're going to do, and then they start what they're doing. So by the time that you get there, you'll see some projects that are more than halfway done, and really start to understand, you know, what they're doing and how they're doing it. They won't be able to finish in the 3 hours that you're there, but you'll be able to come back during Taste of Indiana, the festival, and the artist will have the finished piece at Taste of Indiana, and you'll be able to buy that piece through an auction site. Where they'll be auctioning off their items on the day of the Taste of Indiana.
Well, now that's very cool. So that you know, helps to make it good for the artists, you know, as well as you know, as the restaurants, you know, that you were talking about earlier. Now, how much is it? What are some of the details of the event? That sort of thing.
Sure. Yeah, the cost is only $45. You can go on Eventbrite and find the event just by searching I3, and. You know, it's 3:30 to 6:30 on Sunday, August 26th at Madame Walker Theater.
And Dig In, Taste of Indiana has a website. People can find information about that as well.
Yep, digindiana.org. In fact, you can find information there about Taste of Indiana, which is actually coming up quickly, too, the last Sunday in August. So, yeah, both events are very top of mind for us right now.
We've been talking with Tom England about Indulge, Imbibe, Inspire, which takes place Sunday, June 26th. For tickets to the event, look for I3 at eventbrite.com. And stay with us for a Tasty Cook This segment with local chef Eli Laidlaw when we're back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Jolene Ketzenberger, and we are back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, and today we are heading back into the kitchen for a Cook This segment. This week, we're cooking with Eli Laidlaw, sous chef at the Alexander Hotel in Indianapolis. Eli handles the menu at Plat 99 at the Alexander, so I stopped by the bar this week to see what the chef could do with a pork chop, and what he came up with was absolutely delicious.
My brain goes towards, like, pork works with apples and thyme and rosemary, and it goes really good with red wine and white wine. There's just a million different possibilities that you can go through and do. One of my favorite things to eat and eat really well with pork is a farinette cake. So that's one of the, like, a savory bread pudding. So this pork also goes really good with mushrooms, so you can make kind of like a mushroom and blue cheese farinette cake and sear that and have the pork chop roasted and rested really nicely, and you could almost, you know, make like an applesauce glaze with that. So just reduce some apple juice and maybe a little bit of white wine or red wine, you know, whatever's going to go best with whatever blue cheese you have, and then kind of go from there. So maybe we can do something like that. That would be fun.
So tell me where you're going right now, what you've done and what you're doing.
So what I started, I took the pork chop and seasoned it with a little bit of the Pinot Noir salt that we have up here and a little bit of black pepper. And then I talked about making this farinette cake and was going to use brioche bread or baguette, which I usually do. But I started thinking more about what goes with the pork. You know, mustard goes well with the pork. Pretzels go really well with pork. So we're going to try to make a pretzel farinette cake. Pretty interesting idea. Haven't done this before. Nice thing about farinette cakes is they don't have to be, you know, precise in size or anything like that. You're going to really mush it up and press it together.
Like a bread pudding.
Exactly. Yep. It's exactly the way you want to think about it.
Okay, so we're in the walk-in now. Yep, so what are you going to be looking for?
So I need, for the Fahrenheit cake, like a bread pudding, you need cream, you need eggs. Those are your two basic components. And I was thinking about a blue cheese, so I was missing my Asher Blue upstairs, which I'm sad. They must have been busy enough to use that all. So I'll go Stilton. I can use the Stilton. That's a good one. So we're thinking pretzel, mustard, blue cheese, and a Fahrenheit cake. We'll put the mustard in the sauce. I can work with that. Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
So what herbs are you looking for?
Right now, just basic thyme and rosemary. Not a lot of either, just enough to kind of give that herbaceous taste to it.
Oh, you've got mushrooms.
Yeah, we've got some nice oyster mushrooms that came in. So we will roast down those as well. So like you're making a bread pudding, you want everything to soak up in there a little bit. So crack one egg. Touch of cream, probably quarter to half a cup, just to get everything soaking. And then we're going to chop up some of these herbs to go inside it as well. So I've got a little bit of thyme, a little bit of rosemary. Going to cook down those mushrooms just a little bit and put those in with the Fahrenheit cake to give it that much more flavor. No, I'm big on layering flavors. You know, as much flavor as you can pack into one thing, the better off it's going to be.
So now what kind of mushrooms are those?
Oyster mushrooms. Really, usually pretty delicate mushrooms, not very funky, not very pungent. They just have a really good earthy flavor to them. They're some of my favorite mushrooms for sure.
So tell me what you're doing.
Just sauteing those mushrooms a little bit. We melted down a little bit of the butter, and from the cutting board where I cut the herbs is pretty much what I wanted. Some of those herbs got onto the mushrooms, so we'll cook those into it, and those will help start wilting out a little bit, and a lot of those flavors will come out a little bit more. I'm not one to season the mushrooms until they're pretty much cooked and caramelized. It's something I learned from John when I was at recess. You don't season them until the very end because they have so much liquid in them. You season them first, and they're just going to wilt out all the water, and it's never going to caramelize. It's never going to sear.
So you've caramelized the mushrooms, browned them really nicely.
Yep, caramelized the mushrooms, and then we have some of this fond on the bottom of the pan. Fond is that delicious flavor that's coming out of the mushrooms, that's coming out of whatever you're cooking or searing.
The bits on the bottom.
Exactly, and that's just going to add that much more flavor to our sauce. So caramelize the mushrooms, cook those off a little bit, and just a touch of butter, some salt and pepper, and then we're adding that to our Fahrenheit mixture, which right now is just pretzel buns, an egg, a little bit of cream, and herbs. So we're going to take that, mix that together, really crunch it up so you can get a lot of that liquid into the Fahrenheit cake. And you just kind of look at it as a bread pudding. You know, if it's too wet, you can add a little bit more bread. If it's too dry, you can add a little bit more cream.
Describe what you've got there now.
So what I've got is, you know, your base mixture for a savory bread pudding, or in this case, a Fahrenheit cake. We've got our pretzel buns that are chopped up, our caramelized mushrooms, egg, a little bit of cream, salt, peppers, thyme, and just a touch of rosemary. They're all crushed up and beat up together, so you're kind of opening the pores of the bread a little bit more, and all that stuff is soaking in, all that flavor is soaking in. Now we're going to let this sit for just a second while we clean up. Then we're going to roll it up into a log in our parchment paper, and we're going to cool it for just a couple minutes, and then we'll sear it. So I packed all the pretzel bun mixture, the Fahrenheit mixture, into this parchment paper, rolled over the parchment paper to cover it, and then really press it into a circle with my hands.
So it looks a bit like a sausage or something.
Yeah, exactly. You want it to be a very tight, you know, looking sausage mixture. We're just twisting the parchment paper one way on one end and the opposite on the other end, so we're getting as tight as possible. And then we're just going to chill this in the cooler for about 5 minutes so it has time to set up and everything has a little bit more packing to it. That way we can slice it and sear it. So I'm thinking more of the blue cheese as a garnish so we can sear off the pork chop and sear the Fahrenheit cake, and we'll do a couple slices of the pork chop with just a few crumbles of blue cheese on the top and the sauce going over so it starts to melt the blue cheese and it gets in with the pork chop and then everything kind of makes sense together. know, in my mind and the back of my tongue, it's saying, you know, the salt from the pretzel and the herbiness from the farinet mixture is going to go well with the earthiness and tanginess from the blue cheese, and the pork will be that rich kind of like Pinot Noir salt mixture on top of that. So far, everything's making sense in my brain.
Well, it sounds good to me, and it's looking good, and things have, are smelling good, so I'm very excited about this.
We have our pan that we cooked off our mushrooms in. It's got that nice brown fond on the bottom. We're going to heat this back up and deglaze with a little bit of apple juice, and we'll put the mustard in that to make an apple mustard glaze for it. And that's where I'm going to put the blue cheese on top of the pork and then let the glaze kind of melt that into it. Everything kind of making sense in your brain a little bit? Is it kind of working, starting to work?
I think it sounds great. The pork chop is starting to look good. You know, it's starting to smell good.
That's our first turn for our diamond marks. You know, presentation is everything. You know, if it doesn't look good when it first comes to your table, when it first comes to you, then you're not going to think it's that good. But if it looks good, then it's going to taste better. You know, that's the weird thing about science and your brain working.
Now tell me what you're doing there.
So this is the pan that we cooked off the mushrooms in. That's going to deglaze the, that little brown fond on the bottom. I deglazed that with a little bit of apple juice. And we're just going to let that simmer down a little bit. Keep stirring it. Keep scraping the bottom to get all those delicious bits up from the bottom. And then we'll mount that with just a touch of butter, making it, you know, a basic butter sauce. And then we might actually add just a touch of sweet soy to help thicken that. And the mustard.
Yeah, tell me what you're doing with the applesauce that's simmering.
The applesauce is going now. It's reduced by about a quarter right now. I added just a spoonful of mustard.
Now, what kind of mustard?
I love whole grain mustard. It's a different texture. It's spicier. It just works really, really well. Better than Dijon. Dijon's almost too spicy for what we're looking for here. Whole grain has the chunks, the texture, the flavor, but it's spicy enough to cut through a lot of things for that acidity, but not spicy enough to where it's going to almost burn your mouth and be nasally like the horseradish would be.
So how's the pork chop looking?
Pork chop looks fantastic. Actually, better than I thought it was going to look, which I'm excited for. I'm going to top that with just a touch of butter. And actually, the stems that we clean off the herbs, I'm going to put that under the pork chop because flavor rises, heat rises, so if you're putting it under the chop, that means more herbaceous flavor is going to go up into it. Something I learned from doing tastings at the Omni Hotel years and years and years ago with Joe Adamo.
So now where's it going?
So we're popping our pork chop into the Turbo Chef. And as I said, it's an extremely hot little oven. And you want to be careful not to burn it, but we need to cook that all the way through. Pork's one of those things where you don't have to cook it to 197 degrees to not die from it. You know, you can eat pork and it's really good, and you can cook it to 150 degrees where it's still just barely pink and it's juicy. You don't have to overcook it like, you know, it's not chicken. Chicken, obviously, you have to cook very, very highly, but pork, there's a false accusation that pork will hurt you and get you sick if you're not cooking it too long. So we're trying to get people away from that now.
So this is looking good.
Yep, our sauce is reducing pretty well. I'm actually going to put a shot of bullet bourbon into this. We want that to go almost all the way down until it's really almost dry. And that's going to be, it's called au sec. And then you want to mount that in with really cold butter. If you do warm butter, your sauce will break so much faster. And it won't hold nearly as well. But if you do cold butter, it'll emulsify, it'll thicken up, and it'll stay, you know, have that little sheen and be delicious.
Okay, so what do you think? How is it tasting?
That's fantastic. That bullet bourbon was a very nice addition. Let Miss Jolene taste this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you've got apple. You've got a little bit of that mushroom kind of taste to it. You've got the mustard for the acidity. You've got the bullet bourbon for that background spicy ryeness. And it's all really working together. I'm pretty excited for this to go down a little bit more. So as it reduces, all that flavor is coming out that much more. And you're just going to want, to watch it because it'll burn very fast. There's a lot of sugar in that apple juice. But also there's a lot of caramelization that can happen. Caramelization is all flavor. That fork is just about where I want it to be. For our sauce, is actually to a beautiful point right now. You see it's gotten thick on its own. That sugar's starting to caramelize inside that. So we're just gonna turn that off and let that stay warm. Again, we have this Stilton blue cheese, pretty funky. We're just cutting a couple pieces off that. Nothing too crazy.
So tell me what you're looking for on the Farinette cake.
So what you're looking for on the Farinette cake is that beautiful golden brown caramelization. You don't want it to be black in spots or, you know, undercooked anywhere. You want it to be just perfectly golden brown all the way across. So that's how you know that's going to happen, is you can just swirl it around in your pan and it's not sticking. That's how you know the caramelization has actually created a nonstick surface for you, which is, it's fantastic if you can do it proper. You know, the pan's just got to be hot enough, not super hot. Just let your butter kind of brown naturally. Put the Farinette cake in and it shouldn't immediately smoke. It should just be kind of bubbling and hot enough to sear a little bit. Shake it around and feel, don't worry about picking it up. You won't break it. It's a pretty firm little cake. So we have it. It's seared. It's caramelized. It's beautiful. And we're going to throw this in the oven for just a second. And while we do that, we're going to turn our sauce back on. And we're going to mount that butter. You don't need a lot of butter. You still want a lot of that, you know, delicious natural, you know, apple and rye and mustard flavor. But you can see it's gotten nice and thick. Don't forget about your Farinette cake in that really hot oven. You already did, didn't you? I saw it.
I did. It's like, oh, that's right. You just put that in, and it's probably only been about a minute.
Probably not even that. It's done. It's, you know, you can put your hand there, and it's pretty well warm. That feels pretty good all the way through.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's caramelized on both sides. You got a little bit of that butter, that brown butter soaking into it, but a lot still in the pan, so you're not too worried about it. And I'm going to put that, again, in a warm resting spot. And we have our sauce. We put cold butter in. You want to put cold butter again so it doesn't break so fast. And just knock to a little bit of cold butter. Stir, stir, stir. I always just shake my pan so you don't add any extra air to it. Watching, I've made a mess around the burner from, you know, all the sauce reducing, so we're trying to wipe that up just a little bit as we go.
Like you said, clean, clean, clean.
As you go, clean as you go. Be kind of a freak about it, that's okay. Pork chop, and you see a lot of that liquid is coming out of that pork chop. That's all flavor, so you want to just dump that right into your sauce. Don't even think twice about it. Dump that right in your sauce, and that's just extra flavor for you. Swirl that in.
So you have your pork chop ready, you have the sauce ready, you have the Farinette cake ready, and you've chopped your blue cheese.
Yep.
Now it's all going to come together?
Now it's ready to plate.
We've been cooking at Platt 99 in Indianapolis with Alexander Hotel sous chef Eli Laidlaw. You can check out the new menu at Platt 99 at thealexander.com. And we'll talk more with Eli when we come back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. In today's show, local chef Eli Laidlaw, sous chef at the Alexander Hotel in Indianapolis, took on our Cook This Challenge and created a delicious pork chop and Farinette cake. After we sampled the dish, I talked with Eli about his culinary background here in Indianapolis, the highs, the lows, why he's happy to be back at the Alexander, and what he's got cooking at Platt 99.
So I'm not from here. I'm obviously not from Indianapolis. I'm from a small town called Norway in Maine. I grew up in the middle of nowhere and worked in a family-owned restaurant called Boomer's, and that's really, I attribute my work ethic to that place, to Rose and Tom and Arn and Heather and all of them that really, they were there every day. You know, Rose and Arn lived upstairs, and they were the ones that taught me how to do most of what I know now. You know, they taught me how to make everything from scratch. You know, everything has to be made from scratch. It's always better that way, you know. You work. You're here to work. You're here to bust your ass and work, you know? And then, so I went to high school and did culinary classes in high school and worked at a hotel. And I actually came down here to visit my brother for a weekend and worked in the Omni Hotel as just a stage and kind of like their little rounds guy that just ran everywhere and did anything and worked random omelet stations and just got beat on for like 3 days straight. And it was not fun. It was not pretty. But I ended the weekend.
When was that?
This was like 7 years ago, mm-hmm. 6-7 years ago. It's when Anthony Armstrong and Ryan Evans were still at the hotel. And I remember like finishing out the weekend and I didn't get paid, obviously, for a stage. And then the chef's like, here's like 3 T-bone steaks. You know, here's 3 quarter house steaks for you, Luke, and Angie. And, you know, thank you for working. And it was a lot of fun. And then I went home to Maine.
Back to Maine.
Yeah. I actually got a phone call from the hotel. Like, we really liked you. We'd be more than happy to have you on board if you could fill out an application and if you could move down here. So I wasn't going anywhere in Maine. You know, it seemed like the right time and the right thing to do. So I moved down here. I've been here ever since.
Were you out of high school then?
Yeah, I was out of high school. I was 2 years out of high school at that point. So this was 2009. And then moved down here, worked at the Omni, worked at, obviously have worked here, did a couple stages around at different places, worked at Recess and went to the Chef's Academy here. You know, Recess was like the fine-tuning point of my career. You know, I got to work under Abby and John and Greg and see all those guys' careers like flourish and how awesome they all are and what they all do and really like take bits and pieces from them. And, you know, I learned how to make salsa and guacamole because that was my job. You know, that was
your job at Recess?
Yeah, that was my job when I first started at Recess. Abby and John would be like, Eli, go make us chips and salsa every night. That was like our staff meal every night because I wasn't really sure what I was supposed to do. That's when room 4 was still there. So I would cut carrots and prep for people. And they'd be like, all right, go make chips and salsa. And I learned how to make really good salsa and really good guacamole. So that was a lot of fun. And, you know, that actually, you don't realize it until later on that that's how you learn to like build flavors. And, you know, salsa is a very easy thing to make, but really good salsa isn't that easy to make, you know, having all the right flavors and everything balanced the proper way. So, you know, Recess was great. And when I left and came here to the Alexander full-time to be sous chef, it was my first sous chef job, first management job, and learned a lot of career changing things and, you know, mind changing things of how to work and how to run a business and a restaurant and manage people, you know, and just really make really good food. You know, I was in banquets and I learned how to do high volume to the best of my ability and still keep it really good quality food. You know, that was difficult, but it worked out well. So that was good. Then, you know, I went to Nourish.
Now we have to talk just a little bit about that because that didn't end well, right?
Not necessarily well. You know, it's really nobody's fault, but it's everybody's fault. You know, there's a lot of things that went on, and we didn't make enough money in 3 months for our owners to be satisfied, and we didn't really get our full chance to really flourish. You know, we, as a culinary team, we were all thinking that, you know, the fall was going to be our time to kill it. We had really good menus written. We were excited. That was our type of food.
So everybody was very excited about the food and very excited for what you were going to do.
Yep. I think we got really good reviews about the food. I think everybody really liked our food. We didn't have a very good location. There wasn't enough support in a couple different areas. And, you know, we didn't go about things the right way. There was a lot of, you know, I talked about our PR company helping now, and, you know, what we had over there wasn't the best. You know, it wasn't pushing us the right directions. Yeah, I was in TV and I was in magazines and everything, but it wasn't enough to get us noticed. You know, we did a Chef's Night Off dinner there with Abby and John and Carlos and Brandon Baltzley, and that was fantastic. That brought us a lot of attention. And then 2 weeks later, we closed our doors.
So that was a disappointment, I think, for the culinary community. You know, we were disappointed to see what you were doing close. But you have rebounded, and yep. I think it's going to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was a humbling experience. You know, I said it when I talked to Nouveau the other day, and it was riding a high from being sous chef here and doing really well here, and people really liked me here, and then going to being executive chef at Nourish and doing really good things there, and then that. The doors closing over there, and, you know, I just kind of went to Colorado with my mom and my brother to kind of just hang out and relax and clear my head a little bit, and then I came back and talked to my girlfriend a lot, and she has a very business oriented mind, so she helped me figure out what I really wanted to do, and I went back to Recess and just humbled myself and learned and was just a line cook again. And
well, there's nothing wrong with that, right?
Right. It was a difficult transition. It was difficult to just be a line cook and just be not a manager, not anybody. You know, I'm just there to work. So it took a couple months to figure out, and then after that, it was good. It was humbling. It was nice. It brought me kind of back down to earth and realized really what food is and how to make food and how to keep things simple but delicious. As you can see with the pork dish I made, nothing was crazy or fancy about that. It was just good. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. So
just good, delicious, solid food.
Right. And that's what I want to bring here to Platt. You know, everything's going to be just new and good and approachable and proper, and nothing out of this world or fancy. It's just going to be enjoyable, you know, which I'm excited for. So I'm excited to, I got this opportunity to come back here. And
so now you're back at Platt 99, and you have some new menus coming out soon, I think.
Yep. We're actually rolling out our new menu tomorrow. I'm pretty excited for it, so I'm spending all day today doing a lot of prep for that menu. I just made ice cream downstairs, and we're going to do a lot of house-made things. We're going to go really back into as house-made as possible and as homemade as possible, as local as possible. You know, obviously, I can't get everything local, but it works out. There's a lot of great people around. There's a lot of great farmers and growers around that can work with us and will work with us and that are excited to work with us, and I'm excited to work with them. You know, we're planning farm tours, and we're going to go see everybody and see where our products are grown, where our pigs are grown. We're going to name that pig, and then we're going to end up going to have that over here. So it's exciting for me. It's exciting for me to come back and work really well and work really hard, but also build a great team. You know, Nourish was the best team I probably ever worked with, between Ben, Tracy, Jeremiah, Seiji. All those guys were just so fantastic for me. And I wish I could have them all here, but being able to build a new team and get excited about building a new team and have these guys excited to work with me again is nice. So I'm excited for that.
We've been talking with Alexander Hotel sous chef Eli Laidlaw. You can check out his menu at Platt 99 in Indianapolis or go to thealexander.com. This is Jolene Katzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thanks for tuning in to our show this week, and thanks also to our guests, Mark and Tanya Swartz and Chef Aaron Kim of Cannonball Brewing Company, Dig-In Executive Director Tom England of the event Indulge, Imbibe, Inspire, and Chef Eli Laidlaw of Platt 99 at the Alexander Hotel in Indianapolis. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.